Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, History of the Life of Ajamil, Text Number 12. Nasnanta. Patyam evanam. Nasnanta patyam evanam. Vyadhayo bibhavanti hi. Vyadhayo bibhavanti hi. Evam niyamakrid. Rajan, evam niyamakrid rajan, shanai, shemaya, kalpate, shanai, shemaya, kalpate. Nashnata patyam evanam. Vyadhayo bibhavantihi. Evam niyamakrid rajan. Shanai keshmaya kalpate. Nashnanta patyam evanam. Vyadhayo bibhavantihi. Evam niyamakrid rajan. Shanai keshmaya kalpate. Nashnata patyam evanam. Vyadhayo bibhavantihi. Evam niyamakrid rajan. Shanai shemaya kalpate. For word na, not. Ashnata, those who eat. Patyam, suitable. Eva, indeed. Anam, food. Vyadhaya, different types of disease. Abhivanati, vanti, regulative principles. Oops, sorry, overcome. He, indeed. Evam, similarly. Niyamakrit. One following regulative principles. Rajan. O king. Shanai. Gradually. Shemaya. For well-being. Kalpate. Becomes fit. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My dear King, if a diseased person eats the pure, uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured, and the infection of the disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulative principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses toward liberation from material contamination. Purport. One is gradually purified if one cultivates knowledge, even through mental speculation, and strictly follows the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras and explained in the next verse. Therefore, the platform of jnana, speculative knowledge, is better than the platform of karma, fruitive action. There is every chance of falling down from the platform of karma to hellish conditions. But on the platform of jnana, one is saved from hellish life, although one is still not completely free from infection. The difficulty is that on the platform of jnana, one thinks that he has been liberated and has become Narayan or Bhagavan. This is another phase of ignorance. Yenye rati daksha vimukta maninaschaya ashta bhavad avishtu bodo buddhaya aruhaya kritcha rena param param tata patanyato nad rita yushmad angrayaha. Because of ignorance, one speculatively thinks himself liberated from material contamination, although actually he is not. Therefore, even if one rises to the Brahma Jnana, or understanding of Brahman, one nevertheless falls down because of not taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Nonetheless, jnanis at least know what is sinful and what is pious, and they very cautiously act according to the injunctions of the Shastras. Verse again. My dear king, if a diseased person eats the pure, uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured, and the infection of the disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulative principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses toward liberation from material contamination. So first I want to thank the devotees for allowing me to try to say something. I'm certainly not a jnani, not even a karmi, but we try to do little something when Krishna asks us to do, and then in this way I can hopefully make a little progress here in spiritual life. Hare Krishna. Okay, so this is the story of Ajameel. But before Shukadev Goswami gets into the story, he's actually trying to understand a little bit better where Maharaj Parikshit is at. And so he's kind of feeling him out, as we say. So he's offering him different processes. And actually, Maharaj Parikshit is answering correctly and showing him that he's actually worthy of understanding the absolute truth. So all these different types of knowledge, different things, they ultimately culminate in bhakti. And that's where we are trying to aim. We're trying to get to the platform of bhakti. So most people are, you know, what we call karmis, right? And the devotees have this thing about, yeah, the karmis, you know. But factually, you know, we're not so far from being karmis ourselves, quite frankly. To become a true bhakta is not an easy thing. It's not at all an easy thing. And we start out thinking that we'll be able to reach a very high platform . But it's not as easy as we think sometimes. the stage of bhakti is very, very difficult and at the same time easy. Or as we say, it's simple for the simple-minded, but hard for the hard-hearted. But if one can actually stick to the path of bhakti, then all of the other forms of yoga, namely karma, jnana, these different types of yoga, are all included in bhakti. So in one sense, there's no need to undergo all these other processes. If one can simply just jump to the state of performing devotional service, then all of the other forms of knowledge and activity are fulfilled. So this is the great mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada, is that they've given us this platform to just jump to the front of the class, so to speak. All these different types of schools are there in order to reach this platform of practicing bhakti yoga. But by directly engaging in the service of Krishna and the Vaishnavas, you can jump to the head of the class very, very quickly. But at the same time, it's a precarious situation. They say that devotional service, bhakti yoga, is like walking on the razor's edge. So one can easily fall from this very, very sharp point, you know, if you come to the right, to the point of all knowledge, of all jnana and karma, everything is to the point. It culminates in bhakti. So you're right on the tip there. But at the same time, you can easily fall off if you're not careful. So we have to try to understand, first of all, how fortunate we are to be able to, you know, have come to this stage where we have an opportunity. I mean, it's not like, you have the opportunity to engage in service. We understand what it means. You know, Prabhupada gives us so many guidelines on how to do it, how to perform bhakti, how to engage in devotional service. Our whole program is meant to teach us how to do this. It's very simple. You just can't, like when I was talking to Madhu Sevita the other day, and there was one devotee, and he was asking for Prabhupada, you know, what is it that you want me to do? You know, he was looking for some like service, you know. Prabhupada said, well, you know, you chant 16 rounds, you follow the four regulative principles, and you come to the morning program, you know, like this. And then the devotee was like, you know, okay, right, you know. And then he was thinking about it, and then he came back to Prabhupada again. He, you know, this is an advanced devotee. He's done a lot in the movement. He came to Prabhupada again. He said, but Prabhupada, what is it that you want me to do? And he says, you chant 16 rounds, you follow the regulative principles, and you come to the morning program. And, you know, then he kind of like walked away and goes scratching his head thinking. In one sense, this is all we really need to do. If you can maintain that, you know, like in these next verses, it's explained, you know, concentrate the mind, observe a life of celibacy, don't fall down, undergo austerity voluntarily, giving up sense enjoyment, you know, be clean, be truthful, follow regulative principles, chant the holy name. A sober, truthful person who knows religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins performed with his body, mind, and words. And then the next line in this next verse is interesting. These sins are like the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burned by the fire, although their roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. Okay, so Prabhupada gives us what to do. You know, come to the morning program. What does it mean? You know, you worship the deity, you're clean, you bathe, you chant, and then, you know, the 10 offenses, don't commit the 10 offenses. If you think about it, the morning, and even yoga, what do we think? People are all fired up about yoga nowadays. So they go to the yoga classes and they put on, you know, leotards and this and different types of things and get their mat and their, right? And they do breathing and stretching and this thing and that thing and everything. But if you come to the morning program, you know, how many times do you bow down? How many times do you stretch out, you know? And Mother Malati, she's saying, what is this? Mataji's never do, you know, full dandavats, you know? Mataji's can also do full dandavats. They can do. This is an interesting point, you know. You never see, this is Malati speaking, you never see Mataji's doing full dandavats, you know? This is something that the men have dreamed up, that the women can't do full. Anyway, the point is that just by coming to the morning program and bowing down before the deity and offering obeisances, you're doing yoga, you know, sitting, you know, for like we sit at home, right? We always sit at a table. We never, you know, we always have a chair. And when you take prasadam, you know, at least, I don't know, you guys have benches downstairs. But for me nowadays, just to sit on this seat like this in a cross-legged position is difficult. Because I don't have a temple next to me. You know, I just get up, chant my rounds, and then sit at the table and have breakfast. And that's my morning program. But it's not the same as having, you know, the deities and dancing and chanting. And, you know, anybody plays mridanga knows that if you chant and sing, it's, you know, it takes a lot of energy, you know. So there's your, you know, instead of going to the gym. So you don't need to take yoga classes. You don't need to go to the gym. You don't need to go on hikes. You don't need to. Everything is there in the morning program. It's really true. And then if, you know, if you can do that, and then on top of that, go out and preach, distribute some books, sell some prasadam, meet some people, invite them back to the temple, somehow or another share what you've, you know, been given by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Panchatattva. If you can share that with others, then that type of bhakti, when you actually share that type of bhakti with others, guess what? That burns up those, you know, the roots. It goes right to the root and burns up those desires, those sinful desires, which are, you know, they become stagnant. If we perform devotional service, they become stagnant. That, you know, these desires. But the second we kind of stop, if we stop devotional service and kind of think, okay, you know, I've made some advancement, I'm feeling pretty good, you know, I'm not as miserable as I was before I joined the movement. And then we kind of become lax. Then the material desires, they start to resurface again. That those stagnant desires, which are roots, which have been, you know, cut away by our service, they start to grow again. And they start coming up again. So we have to be ever mindful of this and continue to engage in this service of Krishna and the devotees. Otherwise, these desires come back up. Yeah, in one of the previous verses I was saying last time I was here, it's like the bathing of an elephant, where the elephant goes into the water, you know, becomes purified and comes out, then immediately throws dirt. on yourself. So you become dirty again. If you don't constantly bathe and then avoid these desires, you know, keep the mind fixed on service, then you you become engaged again in sinful activity. So it all boils down to controlling of the senses, controlling of the mind, and remaining fixed on the path of bhakti, and always trying to strive to make progress in devotional service, and trying to please the devotees, serve the devotees. This mood of service is key. When we have this service attitude, that's the key. The second we start to think, oh, now I've got a little bit of position, now I've made, you know, I've got a little bit of relief, then we become proud. It happens immediately. This pride thing just jumps right in. I mean, at least for myself, I see it. I mean, not until it's too late, of course. Not until I've blown it. But, you know, after a while, you begin to realize that the second I start getting a little bit of praise or a little bit of position or a little bit of, you know, lax, from immediately become proud and enter into this enjoying mood. Think, oh, now everything is good. Now let me enjoy. Let me try to enjoy the senses. So that has to be, you know, you got to be always watching for that and very, very diligent in trying to suppress that desire. So the senses, always, as we all know, it all begins with the tongue. What we eat, how we speak. The tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. We say this at the Krishna prayers. And it's really true, you know. So let us begin by controlling the tongue, by controlling how we eat, by controlling how we speak, and especially try to avoid this critical nature of, you know, making offenses toward the other devotees. Because anybody who, you know, walks through these doors is a special soul, isn't it? You know, you just walk into the temple room. There's some devotees, they welcomed us. They said, welcome home. You know, we got that a couple of times. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. But it's really true. You know, when you come into the temple, it's like, you know, you're home. This is the real home. The material world out there is like, that's not our home. We're like the fish out of water. When we're back in the temple and singing and dancing, and this is the spiritual world right here. Prabhupada called these windows into the spiritual world. When I was standing in front of Panchatattva this morning, I was thinking, wow, this is, you know, we're here with Krishna. We're here with Lord Chaitanya. His mercy is just, you know, it's right here. If we can somehow or another, you know, remain fixed in that understanding that Krishna's mercy is right here, we just have to take it. We just have to take advantage of this process. And what does Prabhupada expect of us? What is it? Chant 16 rounds, follow the four gathered princes, and come to the morning program. It's, you know, there's not much more to it than that. If you can do that, if you can simply do that, and we're not talking for a week or a month or... We just met a nice family the other day, but the father was saying how his daughter was fixed on, you know, going to Mayapur. She wanted to go to Mayapur, and then she made a vow. She said, I promise to chant 16 rounds for the rest of my life. And she, you know, she's not a 16, how much? 16 years old, I think. And I thought, wow, far out. Take that vow. And then, somehow or another, that family ended up in Mayapur. You know, boom, like that. Krishna can do anything. Krishna can, you know, arrange anything. Krishna can build a million temples, right? Krishna can build millions and millions of temples. He can do so many things. Or as Prabhupada once said, if my men were surrendered, I could conquer the world in 18 days. It was something like that. I forget the exact quote, but if we're really sincere, if we're really fired up, Krishna can do wonderful things through us. Not that we do anything, but Krishna can do wonderful things through us. And we've seen it so many times. We have friends that have done incredible service. And now it's, you know, the time for the new generation to, you know, take up the reins and, as we say, go for it. You know, plunge into it 100%. Just really, really surrender to Krishna. Because Krishna reveals himself accordingly to how we surrender. If we surrender a little bit, yeah, we'll get a little bit of Krishna consciousness. But if we surrender fully, then Krishna can fully reveal himself, become manifest before us, you know. We'll understand that there, you know, as Prabhupada once, he slammed his fist down. There really is a Krishna. You know, just boom. It's like, you know, it's like we don't really believe it. If we really believed it, we would behave differently. If we really believed there was a Krishna, we would surrender 100%, you know. But we kind of believe it, so we kind of surrender a little bit. So anyway, we have to engage in this service through the association of the devotees and encourage one another, and then we can, you know, make progress. If we have that association, it's so extremely important to have the association and encouragement of the other devotees. And I'm so very happy to see that here in this temple that, you know, you've got, you know, some young blood, as we call it, you know. Young blood, and people are coming, and it's very, very encouraging and nice to see it. I so much appreciate it. I just want to encourage you all to, you know, just as much as you possibly can, just surrender to Krishna and try to push on this movement. And in this way, please Srila Prabhupada and all the Vaishnavas. There's some question, correction.
I wanted to say it's also nice to see that some of the older devotees are still sticking around.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate that, but we see that in a lot of temples. You'll see like five guys, you know, that have been there for the last 30 years. But yes, absolutely. One of the older, we are the ancients now. The ancient ones. Come on, questions? Something?
Well, when you said that about not saving that trouble, that Prabhupada was, the devotee was asking Prabhupada several times, just remember then. Prabhupada was just making the point, but if you can do that, don't get ahead of yourself, because like in the future it's not going to be so easy to maintain that standard. So if you can just stick to that your whole life, don't worry, don't get ahead of yourself, just understand that like basic, it's so important actually.
Yes.
And not only is advanced or older, blah blah.
Well, this was exactly his point, is that, you know, you may go off and do, you know, wonderful things by material calculations, right? But if you don't have that foundation in bhakti, then it, you know, you won't be able to maintain your position as a bhakta. You don't have the foundation. You may be successful, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Didn't explain it better.
No, explained
it fine.
Realization. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. How to overcome this familiarity with things which Krishna is sending or giving us every day, but somehow we are so unfortunate, we don't appreciate. We really become familiar and we know it's there all the time, and our attitude is not the best one. How to overcome this?
How to overcome familiarity. They say familiarity breeds contempt. So yeah, it's a tough one. And Prabhupada also had, just imagine, Prabhupada, most pure devotee anybody could ever imagine. And yet, when people were close to him for too long, they began to think of him as an ordinary person. So how to overcome this familiarity? Well, they say, just like fire, don't become too close and don't become too far away. If you come too close, then you get burnt. If you get too far away, then you lose the benefits. So this is how we can do it, I suppose. It's just keep a little bit of distance. Don't get too close. I mean, maybe you're talking in a position of assets, people coming and I don't know exactly where you're coming from, but as far as, you know, the guru, becoming familiar with the guru, you don't want to get too close and yet you don't want to get too far away. And if for some reason you are requested to come close, you know, like to become a servant of the guru, close, intimate servant of the guru, then one has to be very careful to not become familiar. And one of the ways that, you know, we saw how Prabhupada is, like, if you came into the association of Prabhupada, you bowed down, even if you did it 10 times, 20 times a day, you know. So just to avoid this familiarity. Okay, on a practical note, this is how you do it. The new bhakta, when he comes in, you offer him obeisances. If he offers you obeisances, you offer him obeisances back. This is on a practical note, this is like Radhanath Swami, you know. He's like, you know, everybody knows Radhanath Swami is like, anyway, if you know him, you know him. If you offer obeisances to Radhanath Swami, he'll offer obeisances back. So this, you know, so my trick was, you know, when he's not looking, then you offer obeisances. Then when he turns around, how high, you know. That way you don't feel like, you know, he has to offer obeisances to you. You know, it's like, so anyway, this is a practical thing. But on the practical note, in the morning, we should do this, is that, at least maybe you can't, you know, everybody, but the first person you see in the morning, whoever it is, offer him obeisances. Just to remember that, you know, we're a servant of the servant of the servant, you know. We always have to remember that even the newest guy, the guy that first walks in the door, we don't know who he was in his last life. You know, sometimes you meet these kids, they're just incredible, you know, they're just like advanced, and you're just wondering, how did that happen? But we don't know who they were in their last life. Maybe in their last life they were, you know, like some exalted Rajarshi, some king, you know, some, and he's just finishing up that last little bit of bhakti to go back, you know. We don't know. We don't know how many millions of lifetimes it's going to take for me to get back. And then here's this one, he's on his last lifetime, right? And yet we're thinking, well, I've been in the temple for 5 years. You know, he's just a bhakta, you know. Right? And then we make some offense. Just, I mean, from Krishna's perspective, it's like, no, dude, that's wrong. It's just, it's wrong. So like this, practical note, first person you see in the morning, offer him obeisances. Okay? Next question.
Oh, thank you so much for very nice class. It's indeed very encouraging and enlightening. And I would like to ask you regarding this term karmi, because we know that Prabhupada sometimes calls someone karmis, but when he called someone like that, then he's really concerned for the well-being of that people. But when we do that, we're actually judging. So how to overcome this mentality, and actually what means karma? Does that mean that one is not free from karma, and then who is actually free from karma? So can you please just...
Well, as Lord Jesus used to say, why see the speck in someone else's eye when you have a stick or a log in your own? So this is exactly what you're saying, is that we poke, oh yeah, he's a karmi, but we're also still karmis, really. You know, at one time Prabhupada, what is it? He goes, actually, I know that you're all Mayavadis. You know, just like what? You know, we're bhaktas, and he goes like this. Actually, I know you're all Mayavadis. So it's really true, though. We have to see our real position. So my point on this is that before you can become humble, one has to become honest. If we want to become humble, we have to become honest. And honesty means understanding our actual position. And if we can understand our actual position, then we can see things, you know, as they are, so to speak. So, but the second we become, you become a little bit proud, just a teeny, a pauper is proud of his penny. The second you got a little, one penny, we become proud. Oh, look at me, I have a penny, you know, just like, so what? So the key is, of course, to hear and chant about the great Vaishnavas, about Krishna. Once we understand the greatness of the Vaishnavas, we understand the position of Krishna, you know, then we can understand more clearly our position, how insignificant we are, how small we are, how, you know, basically in Maya we are. And then we're less likely to start poking at other people. I mean, this is the whole material world, right? One person is thinking themselves better than another. And we're all fighting for supremacy. That's our material disease. And it's been with us since forever. So not so easy. It's a difficult thing. We have to work at it constantly. And again, stick with the association of the devotees. Just like ATK, you shouldn't have said that. That was just like, you know, that was wrong. Just like, oh, really? Okay, right. Please forgive me, Prabhu. So with the association of the devotees, these things can be pointed out. We can make progress. If we're on our own, we always think that, yeah, I'm right. I'm doing good, right? Because there's nobody there to check us. So what are the checks and balances in devotional service? Three checks and balances. What are they? Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. So these are the checks and balances. You read the scriptures, you associate with the devotees, you know, you inquire from your guru, and in this way you can, you know, make sure that you're not messing up. That you're not going around and poking at the karmis when that log is still in the eye, in your own eye, right?
Just thinking if I can add something more. Because we have this tripping mentality. We want to actually imitate and don't want to follow. So we try to imitate what Prabhupada said, but don't want to follow. But we cannot imitate his mentality, we just can't follow. So when we try to switch, then we are actually cheating.
Yes. Because his position was of total compassion. Therefore, he could say like that. You know, sometimes he would say something, and then he would say, I can say, but you cannot say. Yeah, because exactly that. His position is that of compassion. Our position is that of, I'm better than you. You know, it makes me feel better when I can poke at you.
And the other thing is that we are actually making offenses to other people, calling them carnies. And they don't even know what that means.
Well, it's, you know, it's a defense mechanism for the devotees, you know, because, face it, we're immature. And when one is immature, then it's a defense mechanism, which is not completely unhealthy or wrong. You have to protect yourself a little bit. Otherwise, you just fall back into it. So, you know, to be a little bit fanatic and a little bit defensive of, you know, association with outside people, it's okay. But it shouldn't be long term. You know, it's not the goal, right? But if we say to ourselves, gosh, I don't want to associate with the karmis, that's not wrong. It's not so bad. Depending, you know, there's so many different levels. But I'm just saying that for one person, that may be a very, very healthy attitude, because then he's going to be protected from, you know, falling back. With, you know, if you associate with the karmis, then you develop their mentality and you fall into the traps that they're ensnared in. So to be able to differentiate between, you know, what is a karmi and what is a devotee, and, you know, basically understand the difference and move this way rather than, well, it's not so bad. But for a person that's, you know, been around a little bit, then yeah, you have to be a little bit more open and compassionate and more loving towards everyone. Yes.
I'm just wondering, many people look at a certain person that he's a karmi. Does that help him in his spiritual development, or is it keeping him a karmi?
I'm sorry?
If many people give that sticker to somebody that he's a karmi, does that keep him as a karmi? Does that support him being a karmi and act in a certain way, whether if somebody would look at them as soul, would that enhance their spiritual growth?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, like we were discussing, it depends on where you're at. If you can, you know, the Paramahamsa sees everybody as a pure devotee, right? And he sees himself as the lowest karmi. That's his position. He can see it. He sees everybody as a pure spirit soul. So for him, that's a, you know, that's the right way of looking at it. But for somebody who's just new to devotional service, they don't know what souls are, karmis are, jnanis are. They're basically learning the very, very foundation of what is what. So for them to understand, okay, this person is a karmi, they don't know anything about Krishna, and this person is in the temple, he must know a little bit about Krishna. So avoid the karmis, associate with the bhaktas. That's healthy, that's good. It all depends on where you're at, you know, on this different rungs on the ladder. The main thing is that we have to understand is that we don't want to be like the karmis. The difference between the karmis and the devotees is simple. The karmis are trying to pull the people that are above them down and step on the people below them so they can make progress. That's karmi. And the devotee is just the opposite. If he's on the lower rung of the ladder, he'll be trying to push those who are above him up so they can make further progress, and the people that are below him, he'll try to pull them up with him so everybody makes progress up. That's the difference between a karmi and a devotee. And we may be on different places on that ladder. You understand? So the main thing as aspiring devotees, we want to help those who are, you know, new. We want to become friends with those who are equals. And those who are above us, then we glorify them and keep them above us and serve them.
I was just coming from a perspective, as you said, that you might not know who's the best or who's new. Whereas, you know, you think I'm here for 5 months and that person might have lifetimes meaning connection to Krishna. So how to distinguish, you know, just is it better to just strictly act towards them as their souls and their bands? And then
yes, that's best. If you can do that, that's what we're taught to do on a practical basis, you know. The difficulty is that when we've been around a while, then we start to think, you know, that I'm important, that I'm... But when we're new, yeah, then, I mean, when you're new, then you're expected to, you know, everybody, you know, you wash the floor, you wash some pots, you bow down to everybody, right? So that's... But the thing is, you got to keep that mentality year after year after year after year. Sachi Mata.
I just wanted to say, if you want to like know more deeper, there's the Nectar of Instruction by Rupa Goswami, which explains it really nice. Kanishka, Madhya, and Uttama, just to explain. It goes a little deeper in that.
Yeah. Anyway, as I said earlier, I'm not a gyani. I'm certainly not a scholar. But you can study all this stuff, and there's books and books and books on it. But the neat thing about bhakti is that if you just love Krishna, if you have a lot of love in your heart for Krishna, because Krishna is... In one sense, everything. So if you love Krishna, then you automatically love everybody and everything. And you don't have to know all the, you know, the details of it. You just love Krishna, and automatically you're going to love everybody and be respectful to everyone and everything and see them all as parts and parcel of Krishna. And that's all Krishna wants, really. Prabhupada said, what do you want? Just to love Krishna. That's all. The gopis weren't great scholars, but they loved Krishna more than anyone. So just learn to love Krishna. Okay, I think we best stop here. We're going to go over. Anyway, thank you very much once again. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.